The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
This week in our series on disinformation, the BBC investigation into Diary of a CEO podcaster Steve Bartlett and Silicon Valley amplifying racism with pseudoscience and AI. We're joined on the line by David Robert Grimes, author of The Irrational Ape, How Flawed Logic Puts Us All at Risk. David, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, for people who don't know who Steve Bartlett is, perhaps you'd explain.
Absolutely. So Steve Bartlett is the host of the Diary of a CEO podcast. He was on Dragon's Den as well in the UK. This podcast is huge. It's one of the top five in the world. So massive listenership, both in the UK and beyond it. But in recent months, he's gone away from the enterprise-driven side of it and moved very much into health information, or we should say more correctly, health misinformation. So very recently, BBC did a feature on this. They went and investigated the different guests he was having on, the claims that were being made, and they found that an average 14 out of 15 of the claims made were absolutely false, with serious ramifications. Now, I have to put my hand in the air and say that I was a consultant on that show, and I appeared as a talking head on it. I had to investigate those claims. But it's been very interesting to see the reaction to that, because that was the biggest piece that BBC have done the last 2 weeks in terms of traffic, and a lot of people were genuinely shocked that someone so high profile could be platforming absolute nonsense for such a long time.
Part of it is that health does well on podcasts. So if you do health items, you're likely to get more clicks.
And that's actually very cynically precisely it. Bartlett himself in an interview pretty much bragged that he was going to bring in 21 million in profit for himself this year on his podcast. And a lot of that's on the back of pivoting towards health information, or again, I should say, misinformation. Some of the guests he had on were absolutely outlandish, as in any qualified medical scientist would have immediately said this is a bad idea. So it's very hard to think this is entirely accidental. And we see a very similar thing, by the way, with other podcasters. Joe Rogan in the States, which is for a long time the biggest podcast in the world, has an absolute track record of doing this. Their health experts tend to be fringe or contrarian figures who make very outlandish claims, and a lot of that is very damaging to patients.
Now, you might give us some examples of the kind of guest he had on and the kind of claims they were making, which are quite frankly wrong.
Absolutely. For example, he had Thomas Siegfried on, who is a cancer biologist, but has very fringe ideas on how you can cure cancer, and very wrong, I can say, absolutely wrong ideas about our current conventional treatments. So he had this individual on basically telling patients that they needed to change their diet, or they were going to get cancer, or they were, you know, or if they went for conventional therapy, that it was barbaric. This is nonsense, and it's wrong, and it's been taken apart so often by different cancer organizations that it was really depressing to see that put onto a major platform. And Bartlett, by the way, is not qualified in any way to act as a moderator. He doesn't really do his homework beforehand, and he has no ability to go, is that true? Can you show me the studies? Can you show me the evidence? So it basically becomes a free reign for him. He also had people on like the glucose goddess, who claims that everyone needs to be monitoring their blood sugar. They don't unless they're diabetic. He had people like Mark Hyman on saying that autism was caused by diet. It is not. These are really obviously false claims from this space. And the fact they were given such huge amplification is frightening.
Now, the fact that podcasts are a law unto themselves, I mean, there is... Here you've got Commissioner Naman that looks after broadcasting and also the tech giants these days, we're told. In Britain, they have Ofcom. Does Ofcom have any say on what's in a podcast?
Absolutely none. And that's the interesting thing. People love podcasts because it feels like you're getting educated. It feels like it's meatier than, you know, something you watch passively. The problem is that podcasts have no obligation towards journalistic standards. And if they tell you something wrong, there's no one that's going to go after them and say that's you shouldn't do that. There's no regulation for them. So I'd always say that when people try to get health information, because I get asked this all the time, they go, what podcast should I listen to? And my answer is probably none. You know, probably if you want real medical advice, you have to talk to medically qualified people that are your doctors, not just random doctors.
Now his justification is we're just bringing you alternative perspectives. And he compares himself to like the radical ideas of Gandhi at the time.
Yeah, I mean, let's say the man's ego is certainly impressive. But here's the thing, and this is it's a great example of false balance, right? If I'm promoting an idea, I have to be able to counter and put it into context, right? Darrow O'Brien has that great skit where he says, you don't have a debate where here's John from NASA and here's Barry who thinks the sky is a carpet painted by God. You don't put that on and say these are equally valid views. And you certainly don't amplify Barry. So the claim that you're bringing alternative views would mean you'd have to understand what the evidence base is and say how strong is that view. Because he's entirely unable and unwilling to do that, all he ends up doing is promoting very dangerous pseudoscience that kills patients.
Now, more cynically, he's got investments in some health companies.
He does indeed. So a lot of promotion to it. He didn't actually declare this. This is the first part of the investigation that was several months before, where he often says, like, this is really good. And they're usually dietary things. And of course, like a lot of influencers or figures these days, he has his own brands of things. But he had actually hidden the fact that he had shares in these companies. So again, when you are listening to these podcasts, realize that the people often have vested interests in selling you a narrative and selling you the knock-on products that come from that narrative.
Now, the second theme is Silicon Valley amplifying long discredited racism, which is backed by so-called science.
This is an interesting one, and I wrote about it for Scientific American this week. So this is why it's fresh in my mind. So race science is, if you think back to the Nazi era, it was a pseudoscience where people were categorized in racial hierarchy, as in it was said, you know, people of color were less intelligent, all that kind of stuff. So this is well and truly been debunked over the years, that there is, people are essentially just people and they have pretty much similar characteristics. Mm. Race from a scientific standpoint is a kind of a meaningless thing, right? You know, you can talk about phenotypic expression, but race itself doesn't really mean anything. However, even though these ideas have long been debunked, they're starting to make a comeback from Silicon Valley in investors and companies. And they're promoting ideas, for example, they're saying that people of color are less intelligent. And they're trying to use data to show that, except what they're not doing is honestly presenting the data. For example, the biggest single factor on how intelligent or how high we score on an IQ test is to do with, you know, how privileged we are.
Yeah.
So if you correct for someone's background, people of color are the exact same as white people or Asian people or anyone else.
Now, this is the other thing, the great replacement theory, where immigrants arrive in, they have bundles and bundles and bundles of children, and soon they outnumber the local population. And we Irish were such a race.
We were the masters of that. And this is what I find interesting. So this stuff is being amplified by some Silicon Valley people we can talk about in a sec. But you're also hearing it on, we talked a lot this year about anti-immigrant protests and the misinformation around that and disinformation. And they use this kind of stuff a lot. But there's a dark irony in that. Because when the Irish came to America in the 1800s, they were both A, classified as a separate race to other European people, which including British people, which is funny to us because we're pretty much the same. And secondly, the average Irish woman when she arrived there would have had 6 kids. And if you look at the records from the 1840s in America, 1850s, they were very panicked that we had outbreed them. But by the second generation, the fertility rate, the total fertility rate, had dropped to the same as the rest of America, about 2.4, 2.5. And that just shows you that, you know, the amount of children people have is a function of their socioeconomic environment, not from some intrinsic virality. And yet we're seeing a lot of this racist screed that, oh my God, all these immigrants are going to come over here and outbreed us. And all you have to do is look at history and find out that doesn't happen.
Now, tell me about the origins of woke.
Woke is an interesting, it was a book that came out last year by a right-wing author called Richard Hania, I think is how it's pronounced. And it basically was one of these typical screeds giving out about how everything's gone woke these days. But this one was slightly different because it was lauded by industry figures like David Sachs and Peter Thiel. These are huge names in Silicon Valley involved with PayPal and things like that in the history and SpaceX and everything else. Now, the Huffington Post then found out that Hania had actually previously written under a pseudonym for white supremacist websites, very racist stuff that he'd used, and they exposed that. He then claimed, well, I don't have those views any longer. However, the reviews of his books would find that basically he's still making racist comments in them, including that people of color need more aggressive policing and need to be in prison more. And weirdly enough, this has been amplified by people like Elon Musk on Twitter going, oh, this is interesting. And it's the same thing again. It's saying that there's some racial intrinsic difference. When really, if you look at the data, it turns out poverty and lack of opportunities is what drives difference in behavior and difference in IQ attainment.
Now, I want to play you something, David, and you can give us a comment on it. You know that Donald Trump is suing the Des Moines Register along with its parent company and its former pollster for what he calls brazen election interference over a poll which was published just days before the election. It was published on the 2nd of November, and it suggested that Kamala Harris would win Iowa, which is a predominantly Republican state. So he filed the lawsuit fresh off that victory of having ABC News pay him $15 million over George Stephanopoulos, saying that Trump was found liable for rape last year. The technical conviction was for sexual abuse, but the judge did say in his judgment that this was, by all accounts, rape in New York. Anyway, Trump's often hostile approach to the American press goes back to his first presidential campaign, and he's expected to carry it on. Anyway, remember Michael Cohen? He was the man who served as attorney for President Trump from 2006 to 2018. He was described as his fixer, and he spoke to CNN about the Trump strategy of suing all around him. Let's have a listen.
So I stand in a unique position because not only did I sue individuals or at least threaten lawsuits against individuals if they would write or claim to be writing a story which is defamatory, demeaning, or disparaging to Mr. Trump, I was also sued by Mr. Trump, as you may remember, for $500 million in the Southern District of New York. The playbook that Donald is doing right now, it's not new. It's what we did at the Trump Organization, where I would reach out to someone like a Des Moines Register, and I would express to them, I don't believe that this is, number one, legitimate. I believe it's a false story, and I truly believed it was a false story, and that if, in fact, you go ahead with it, we will, and my client has advised me, to file and institute a lawsuit against you for defamation. I would say, of every story that you may have seen, 70% never made it to the block. And the reason why is because I would do the research on the company and see basically what their profit margin was. And based upon that, I know that Mr. Trump, who is a billionaire, and gave me full discretion within which to institute lawsuits and to follow through with them, we would do that. And I used to use the New York Times case as an example of, it may have cost Mr. Trump $1 million, but it cost them five.
This is the Times case that he lost.
Yes.
Eventually.
Now, he may have lost the case, but he actually won because of the precedent we were able to set. If you have an extra $3, $4, $5 million, which I know you don't, because I would do research on the company and find that they had a circulation of 30,000 for the month, I could figure out relatively quickly what their profit margin was. And you want to take your profit margin, you want to give it to your lawyers, that's no problem. But understand, the second that we file that lawsuit, we take it to trial.
So that's Michael Cohen, Trump's former fixer, talking about the way they tried to silence media. And we see that ABC buckled and bent the knee to Donald Trump. This is a bit worrying because you're always telling us, you know, it's important to have trusted and respected news outlets to get our news rather than simply propaganda outlets like Fox.
Absolutely. And I mean, just to give you an example, that Scientific American piece I mentioned earlier on, that took a month and a half in legal review, and we had to take out two Silicon Valley names in it because they would sue. And this is a problem that people don't realize. That you can argue this is the billionaire class and the minimum using their leverage to silence media. They talk about being very keen on free speech, Truth Social is Donald Trump's own social network, except they're not really. They're pro speech that suits them. And we're seeing more and more of a problem with that, that actually critics can be silenced, and that includes media or outlets. So if you can threaten to bankrupt someone, they're less likely to investigate you. And this is a worrying sign for things to come, given that power has been concentrated in the hands of social media giants as well, who, as we've seen, whether it's Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg, have their own vested interest in things as well.
David Robert Grimes, author of The Irrational Ape, How Flawed Logic Puts Us All at Risk. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.